Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org, the community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually. Help me name it. I'm no longer doubtful of what I'm living for. And if I make you happy, I don't need to do more. Cause you make me feel. You make me feel.
Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, and we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman, and I'm Kinshasha. This evening, we are talking with Larry Smith, his new book, The Moment, six-word memoirs. It is wild, poignant, life-changing stories from 125 writers and artists, famous and obscure. Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Oh, good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. The Moment and stories. Obviously, the first story would obviously be yours. Tell us about your story and how that kind of morphed into this book, The Moment.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I really believe in the idea of origin stories, both on a sort of a personal level, like who we are and who we become, and for the work we do in life. And the origin story, my origin story for The Moment, really goes back to my grandfather. He was a small town pharmacist and a great storyteller. And in around 2003, 2004, I realized that I didn't really know his whole story. I was a journalist at the time working for a men's journal magazine, and I realized that actually, I knew the bare bones of his story, but I didn't know the real details. And that, for me, was a real sort of kind of a aha moment. And I said to my grandfather, you know, tell me your story. You start from the beginning. I want to know the details. And he said something to me really interesting. He said, my story, and this was a storyteller, a guy who loved to tell stories, but not about himself. My story, who would care about that? And for me, there was a real light bulb moment of, you have to remember to ask people their stories. You really, people need to be asked and told that their story is important. And then I started this online magazine, Smith Magazine, in 2006. And that was our whole idea. Anyone could come and tell a story. We gave them a nice-looking place to do it. We made it very easy to share a story in words or images. And about a year and a half ago, one of our new what we call story projects was The Moment. And we asked the very simple prompt, what's a moment in which your life changed? Maybe instantly, maybe a moment of clarity, maybe something physical, mental. And I didn't know what happened, but the stories just kind of poured in.
How did you choose the stories that you shared and the moments that you shared in this book?
Well, that's a good and it's a hard question. We got a few thousand moment stories into the site, smithmag.net. And then we also always, whenever we do books, we then kind of, you know, ask some storytellers we like, some very famous like Melissa Etheridge and Dave Eggers, and some just interesting people maybe you know, you met along the way, you heard something about. And that's sort of how a book comes together. And, I don't know if these are the 125 best moments exactly that we sort of found and received on Smith Magazine, but it's a real range. And, you know, it's just, as you know, just flipping through the book, and most of them are short, 600 words, 700 words. You know, one moment, there's a story about a woman who gets a phone call in the middle of the night from Hunter S. Thompson, the famous gonzo journalist, and what happens there. And another moment, it's a very quiet piece about a man just watching his mother die. And in each of them, you learn something about life and about yourself. So we tried to really create a nice mix of life experiences. You know, not every experience, but well-written, interesting narratives that all had a very singular story that was very much, you know, to this specific author, but had some universal truth that almost anyone could relate to.
We're talking this evening about the new book, The Moment, 125 writers and artists, famous and obscure, have there's moments, the moments that change their lives in this book. And what moment changed your life?
Well, you know, I was afraid you'd ask me that question. I write about my own moment in the introduction, and it was, you know, it's a very hard question, actually, to think about the life-changing moments, in part because sometimes we have many, and sometimes we just don't know which one really was the one that changed your life. And for me, I went with a very physical moment. And that was, and also as I asked other people to share often the hard parts of their life, you know, the parts that maybe don't like talking about it, because often by releasing that, I think it's both good for the storyteller and for other people reading the story. So I did the same. And I write about being in high school and having an eating disorder, which is pretty unusual for a guy. And in the moment, I'm on the scale for my parents' weekly basic weigh-in with me. And I must have been, God, like 16 years old. And I've got all these sneaky weights. I've hidden in sweatpants. And my mom is just crying. And my father is sort of just confused about how did all this happen. And at that moment, I just felt exhaustion by what I was doing to myself and my family. And, you know, I sort of was a very stubborn teenager, and I sort of refused to get professional help. And I sort of, at that moment, I kind of agreed to get help and was okay. And so that, for me, was a moment. And I don't even like talking about it, much as publishing it in a public book, right? But I think it was something I had to do, to be honest, and really talk about the moment that was most probably life-changing for myself.
It's so interesting to be able to pick that moment that changed the directions in our lives. And you're absolutely right. It's very powerful and very vulnerable to share the kind of thing that you talked about. Did you find that people who submitted those moments to you were honest like that? Was it that kind of honesty?
Well, I think think so. You know, we have a really nice storytelling site at Smith Magazine. It's really just the kind of people find us through hearing, you know, radio shows like yours, through other kind of, you know, literary blogs. They're writers, and most aren't famous writers or maybe even published a book, but they're writers, you know, because we're all writers. And I think that we got a really authentic group of stories. And, you know, when I'm reading the stories that would come into the site, it's not wildly different than you reading the book. And you're reading, you don't know what's coming next, because we did a little bit of editing on the stories, but not much. We didn't like to sort of, you know, turn every story into the same, you know, form and the same tone. We really let the writers be the writers. That's really important for what we do. And I think that it happens less than you think. You know, you read magazines, and it's like every story is kind of the same in so many magazines. But there's a story I like a lot called Photo Finish by a woman named Kimberly Rose. And the story comes in, I'm reading it, and what's happening is that she's sitting in her car outside of a CVS pharmacy opening up photographs. She picked up a roll of her husband's film. And so, okay, you know, what's going to happen? In my mind, I'm thinking, oh, there's going to be some dramatic moment where she sees a photograph maybe of a woman, who is this woman kind of thing, and is there some affair? But that's not what happens. She goes through all the photographs, and it's what she doesn't see. She doesn't see any pictures of herself. Their kids are in the picture, his parents, his coworkers. But she's just not in the picture. Maybe part of her hand is, or her foot. And at that moment, sitting in her car, she realized what she probably knew but hadn't come to terms with. She wasn't in her husband's story. She literally wasn't in the picture. And that, you know, she got the courage to finally get a divorce. It's just a simple, honest story by someone who's never been in a book before. And that is really, I think, why we make this website, why we make this book. And it's the kind of story that anyone can read. And maybe it's not about, maybe you read it, maybe you don't think about your own relationship, but you think about just having the courage to come to terms with something that, you know, you need sometimes that trigger to be like, you know what, I need to do this thing. I need to move on. I need to come to, you know, be honest with myself. And that's what Kimberly Rose does in this story called Photo Finish.
Share with us another story that you really like.
There's a story that I like a lot, and it's a dramatic story, but I think there's something that anyone can relate to. By a writer named Aaron Huey, whose main job is photographer. And he's a photographer in war zones. And his piece is called If I Don't Die Today, I Will Marry Kristen Moore. Hmm. And he's in Afghanistan, and the bombs are coming. And now we know how it ends because he lives to write the story. But the bombs are coming, and it's very intense. And he's with this writer who's doing a story, and he's the photographer. And they're just trying to remain calm. And in that moment, he realized that he'd just been with this woman for years, and he just was afraid to commit and this kind of thing. And he just was being, you know, often like a guy, just, you know, doesn't want to commit, grow up kind of thing. He just talks about that internal dialogue he had. And there's a beautiful photo that he took. I mean, it's of him, but like, I guess when you set up the photo, you're the photographer still. Aaron Huey and Kristen Moore are being married on top of a tank. And, you know, I hope that none of us are in a war zone. I've never been in a war zone. I assume you haven't. But we've all had these moments where you need to have a gut check. I guess it's similar in a way to Kimberly Rose's the gut check. So I just like that it's a very dramatic story, but it's a very universal story. I'll tell you a less dramatic story, which is also universal, which is called Take the Wheel. And Take the Wheel is by a woman named Piper Kerman. And she's had a very crazy life. She spent a year in prison for a crime she committed in her 20s, and went to prison, and then she got out and wrote a book about it. But when I asked her to write A Life-Changing Moment, I expected it to be some dramatic crime thing, led her to a life of crime. But that's not what she wrote about. She wrote a piece called Take the Wheel. And she's on a New England road, and she's 14 years old, and she's with her uncle, like the cool uncle, you know, who you like to hang out with. And the uncle's driving, and they're down this little country road that the family always, you know, near where the family lived. And he says, "Do you want to drive?" She says, "What do you mean?" He's like, "You know what? Time to learn how to drive." So they switch places. She takes the wheel, and she sort of, you know, kind of swivels down the country road. And he's got his eye on things, got his hand on the wheel. But in that moment, she says, when they pulled over, she felt like something had changed in her. She went from being a girl to a woman. From a kid to an adult. And just that simple moment, and I never thought like there'd be a story about learning to drive, right, when I put the prompt out on Smith Magazine. But it's just a sweet story that we all at some point do learn to drive. Well, not everyone in New York, but most of us.
We're talking about the book, The Moment, Wild, Poignant, Life-Changing Stories from 125 Writers and Artists famous and obscure. Were the stories from famous artists different from the stories of everyday people?
Not really, to tell you the truth. What was interesting is that in a couple of cases, more often than not, the better-known writers, and Melissa Etheridge, you know, the musician, she has a piece, they didn't even write about what I thought they would. So let me give you an example. Dave Eggers, who has written many books and done so much amazing work for literacy with kids, open up these writing centers all over the country, he, you know, I thought he might talk about the moment he decided to basically sort of dedicate his life to literacy, but that wasn't it. It goes back further, and his moment is called Mr. Kreisch. And in Dave's moment, he's in high school, and he turned in a paper, I believe it was on Faulkner, and his teacher, Mr. Kreisch, you know, gives him an A and writes some notes, but he also includes these six words on the paper: "Sure hope you become a writer." And Dave writes that in that moment, he considered being a writer, and he hadn't considered being a writer because he wasn't a writer, and his family, they weren't writers, and they just didn't know writers. It's you know, the way that, you know, my family doesn't know any astronauts. So, like, being an astronaut just never, it was an option for me. It never crossed my mind. And that's the way it was with Dave, which is amazing to believe when, you know, what an amazing writing career he's had. But those six words just turned something in his head, and that led Dave to become Dave Eggers. Simple, simple moment that he brought back from high school.
I'm wondering about the whole issue of cultural diversity. Is there cultural diversity represented in your book?
Oh, there's lots of stuff. There's really some very interesting stories. Some, you know, some pieces are a lot of the moments when people had all sorts of different life-changing moments. A lot of them happened when people were young, you know, 4, 5, 10, 12 years old. And especially some of the cultural diversity moments, really things about the world were formed in people's heads when they were young. There's a piece called The Assembly by Vivian Chum. And Vivian writes about being in high school. And, I mean, was she in high school? Or maybe she was a little younger. She might have even been in eighth grade. She talks about – oh, she's in seventh grade. I'm just looking at it now. She talks about the principal calling all the minority students to an assembly. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know what's going on. She's in a Texas State public school. Thing comes over the PA system. All seventh grade minority students report to the cafeteria. Could you imagine that in this day and age? All seventh grade minority students report to the cafeteria. And they got a big lecture about their test scores being lower than the white people's scores. And she just, you know, seventh grade. But at that moment, when she was fuming, and she, you know, she didn't, in that seventh grade life of hers, have at that moment the ability to do anything. She's frozen. Her face is blank. She does nothing. But she says to herself, she imagined walking out of the assembly and making a huge scene. And though she didn't, she says, she writes, "From this day on, I promised myself, no matter what the cost, I will speak up." It's just a beautiful and intense remembrance of being in seventh grade and realizing that actually, in hindsight, really just changed who she became, who Vivian became.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Anna Devine at the 7th Street Entry Friday, January 30th. After singing with groups like Schutz and Aiden Intro, singer-songwriter Anna Devine steps into the spotlight on her own. They take the stage with their latest release, Seeing the Trees for the Leaves. Their music is reminiscent of other alternative folk artists, nostalgic, hopeful, sometimes melancholy, but always Anna Devine. Opening the show is Walker Ryder and Lily Blue. More information about Anna Devine at the 7th Street Entry is available at first-avenue.com.
We're talking about the book, The Moment, Wild, Poignant, Life-Changing Stories from 125 Writers and Artists, Famous and Obscure. There's a story, Black Like Me.
Oh, that's by Haley. Black Like Me is a piece set in also in a grade school. That's right. You remember when you had a best friend and that best friend let you down? You know, that can happen when we're 40 or older, or it can happen obviously when we're kids, and perhaps that's when it's the most hurtful. And this woman, Haley Harrell, talks about being in Utah. She's in grade school, and there's a fight. And in the midst of this fight, somebody says, I hate Haley because she is black and I hate black people. And, you know, her best friend didn't stand by her. And it just, she writes, 8 years later, and this woman is also, she's in her 20s now. So this didn't happen so long ago. She writes, 8 years later, I've just barely accepted my full ethnicity and gained appreciation for both my cultures. Because she's half Italian and half black, she says. But every now and then, I recall that afternoon, and no matter what I am in my life, strong emotions, no matter where I am in my life, strong emotions of hate, fear, embarrassment, resentment, and sadness still arise. And that's really stayed with her. It was a terrible moment for her, but I think it, you know, she doesn't say it exactly, but it sort of sounds like it made her a stronger person.
I think that what I appreciate most about the stories is that whether they're a part of our experience or not, we've all experienced that on one side or the other, and it's not so far removed from who we are and what we've done in terms of either when we didn't stand up for that friend for whatever reason, or we didn't speak up when an adult or someone in authority acted inappropriately. And oftentimes for many of us, we either found our voice or were silenced from that point on.
And that's so true, and it can go either way. You can either expand and try to open up and sort of combat something that just was awful and hateful and hurtful, or you recoil. And I think The Moment is a book of expansion. It's a book of people saying, this thing happened and it hurt or it helped, but it made me who I am today. And ultimately, that's a better person.
Larry, I'm wondering about parent stories. Are there any stories about relationships with parents?
Oh, there are many stories. You know, and as we were just talking about Haley's story, I was thinking about how, you know, in a way, and I have a son who's just a year old, and in a way, it's so interesting to sort of realize, like, you know, Haley says in her story at some point, I can't believe they hate me because of the color of my skin. And at some point, and that seems so crazy, right, you know, to us, mm-hmm. like, but at some point, that revelation happens to a kid. You know, you don't understand that that can happen until it does. And as a parent, you know, part of our job, I think, is to sort of be ready for those moments, to prepare them. And my friend's daughter said, well, I don't understand how David and Ken can't get married because they love each other, because she's six and it doesn't make sense to her. She doesn't know that this is, in fact, not the way it works in the whole world, you know. But there are many great parent stories. There's a story by a writer named Colin Neeson, and it's called The Shed. And he talks about the shed that his father had, and his father was a bit of a hoarder, a collector, and he was always going to garage sales and flea markets, just getting everything and shoving it into the family shed. And he writes about everybody else's family on the block had these nice organized sheds with tools on the walls and things. And every time the, you know, him, his brother or himself wanted some object, a new toy or tool, oh, we got one in the shed, go in there. And the shed was a source of nightmare for the kids because it was bad in there and a little embarrassing. But he realizes, he talks in a really poignant, very funny piece also about, you know, the shed where his housed his father's dreams, and anything was possible in his father's shed, and the shed meant the world to him, and sort of understanding. In fact, it took years later to really understand what that shed meant to his dad. And so that's just a sweet story about understanding your own parent, but sometimes it takes years to do it. You mentioned that some of our moments are done in images and photographs, and that's true. And there's a piece called Tattoo by a writer, a woman, an artist named Summer Pierre. And Summer's mom was a very busy mom. She worked for the Rolling Stones during their Tattoo You tour years ago. And it was, you know, cool but upsetting because she was often just, you know, not home. But to show her daughter how much she missed and loved her daughter, she called her daughter Sparrow. And she said, I got a sparrow tattoo on my shoulder because even though I'm away a lot, you're always with me, my little sparrow. And this artist, Summer, did an illustration. You see the mom with the tattoo. But Summer writes next to the art that, in fact, it wasn't a sparrow. It was a hummingbird. And Summer just said, that's okay because I make it a sparrow. Because you want to believe that you're always with your mom. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I kind of convoluted that story, but it's a beautiful story about just a little girl taking the best scenario out of her mom. Her mom's trying hard, maybe not being the whole mom she wants to be, but a little girl in that moment knew that her mom really did love her, even though it was hard with her mom being away so much.
What about forgiveness stories?
Glad you asked that. Forgiveness is a great topic, and it's a hard topic to write about, honestly. And one of the most powerful stories in the whole book is by a woman named Jennifer Thompson. And Jennifer's piece is, in fact, called Forgiven. In her story, she writes about the moment she met the man she believed raped her, Ronald Cotton. But the thing was, after Ronald Cotton went to prison for many years, DNA evidence revealed that, in fact, he didn't do it. And, you know, she'd spent her whole, you know, so much of her adult life, this has been 13 years since this happened, and just angry at this man, and now she was so confused. In fact, she put the wrong guy in prison. I mean, she didn't, you know, it was an honest mistake, but he was innocent. And Ronald Cotton wanted to meet her, and she was very, very scared, obviously. And in the moment, Ronald, she writes, did the one thing I did not expect. I forgive you, he said. I'm not angry with you. You made a mistake because you're human. Don't be afraid of me. I will never hurt you. I always want you to be happy, and I want to be happy myself. Live a good life, Jennifer. Mm. The man I had prayed would die would now teach me how to live. Ronald taught me that afternoon that I have ever learned, more than I've ever learned in any church. He showed me grace, mercy, and forgiveness, and unlocked my spirit so I could live a life of joy, peace, and love. That's a pretty big forgiveness story.
That's a very big forgiveness story. Wow.
And we may not have that situation ourselves. Again, that's a dramatic moment, but we all have moments when we realize we can forgive someone. And actually, what Jennifer reminds us is that by forgiving someone, you actually can let yourself live, let yourself be happy, release something in yourself.
I want to ask you about one more story. And I think that my listeners would think that I'm remiss if I didn't ask you about the story Oprah Calling.
Well, what a wild story. It's exactly what it's called. It's called Oprah Calling. This, again, I'm reading this piece. It comes into the site. I'm just reading it. I'm like, wow, where is this piece going? It's by a guy named Ray Richmond. And Ray was a journalist, and he was writing for a newspaper in L.A. He decided one day to basically write about why he thinks that Oprah should get involved with the election. And he just writes an op-ed column, like, you know, sort of an opinion column for, like, many people who are journalists. Just, you know, here's my thoughts. I think Oprah should, you know, why not Why not get involved? And in this moment, the phone rings, and someone asks for Ray Richmond, and it's Oprah Winfrey. And he says that it was clear this was no imposter, that distinctive voice, Her Highness, inexplicably and surrealistically on line one, no assistant announcing, please hold for Oprah. And they basically, they say they read his column, and he's wondering, you know, what she's wondering what we should do about suggesting involving presidential candidates on the show. So they have this conversation. And, you know, was this the moment that Oprah decided to endorse Barack Obama? And was because of that endorsement the reason that Obama is president? Like, quite possibly. I certainly believe Ray Richmond, and, you know, I fact-checked the column. He wrote the column. And it's just wild. So he says, look, we'll never know for sure if that call was what led Oprah to do it. But he says, you know what? It seems to me that I personally altered the very direction of the free world. Yup, let's go with that. You're welcome, America. So I just can't imagine, I mean, Oprah calling, and you know, and it's a cool story. And I've talked to Ray, and he really seems like a great guy. And it's also, who could make it up? You know, it's just too weird. Oprah on line one.
Larry, what is the address to your website in case any of our listeners might want to share one of their moments or stories?
I hope they will. The address is smithmag.net, smithmag.net, and we have the Moment Project on there, and we have something called the Six-Word Memoir Project, which I'm sure your listeners will really like. We have a lot of folks from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, because you are a very, very literate place, as you know better than I do. And you can submit stories. It's super easy. You can read stories. It's just smithmag.net. We just have a wonderful community. I think it's right up your listeners' alley.
You're so thoughtful in the way that you've put this together, and this conversation is as thoughtful and caring as your book is. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this, and I think I'm going to go to your website myself and share one of my moments. And
I look forward to that.
Thank you so much, Larry, for this conversation. The Moment, wild, poignant, life-changing stories from 125 writers and artists, famous and obscure. Larry Smith. Thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you, Kinshasa. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. We're going to listen to a piece by the late, great Wayne Dyer. A change of feeling is a change of destiny.
This is one of my most favorite quotes from The Power of Awareness. That which you feel yourself to be, you are. And you are given that which you are. So assume the feeling that would be yours were you already in possession of your wish. And your wish must be realized. So live in the feeling of being the one you want to be, and that you shall be. Every feeling makes a subconscious impression. And unless it is counteracted by a more powerful feeling of an opposite nature, it must be expressed. Your feelings are different from your thoughts. Your feelings are what you experience in your body. The dominant of two feelings is the one expressed. I am healthy is a stronger feeling than I will be healthy. I am healthy says, I feel healthy. And I feel healthy. I feel great. I don't determine if I am well on the basis of what it says on a piece of paper or on the basis of what somebody else out there tells me. I live my life feeling within my body that I am strong, I am capable, I am able. And that is not just something that I say. It's not just an affirmation. An affirmation is an intellectual exercise. This is a spiritual knowing within that I am well. I am content. I am prosperous. But the words that Neville used there are the subconscious. Every feeling that you have makes a subconscious impression upon your body and upon your awareness. Now, You need to understand the subconscious mind of yours. Your subconscious mind rules your life. 96 to 97% of everything that you do is done as a result of your subconscious mind. And when your subconscious mind gets programmed, it goes ahead and responds to whatever it is your conscious mind has placed into it. I was 18 years old. I was in the United States Navy for 4 years. And they sent me to a school in Bainbridge, Maryland, to become a radioman and a cryptographer. And we spent an hour a day, every day, for the first 3 or 4 weeks we were there, on a typewriter, learning Morse code. Okay? And my conscious mind had to program my subconscious mind. Now, this subconscious mind of yours is operating all the time. You're sitting here watching a television show. You got up, you picked up your remote control, you turned the channel on, you got dressed, you ate lunch, you went to the bathroom, you go to work, you get into your car, you drive to work, you don't think about what I'm going to do. Everything that is going on in your life, everybody in here in this room, you got here through your subconscious mind. You didn't have to think about every single thing that you were doing, but there was a time when you did in order to learn that. This habitual subconscious mind of yours rules your life. So I'm 18 years old. I'm taking Morse code. Da-da-da, here's the alphabet, a little bit of it anyway. Da-da, da-da-da-dit, da-da-da-dit. Da da dit 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 da da dit da da dit 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 da 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 dit da 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 dit da 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 dit. That's A through P. Check it out. That's 53 years ago. And my subconscious mind is still keeping track of the da 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 da. You're doing the same thing, only you don't use Morse code. But you've programmed your subconscious mind with did-it-it, da-da-dit, I can't do that. Did-it-it, da-da-dit, I'm not very attractive. Did-it-it, da-da-dit, I'm overweight. Did-it-it, da-da-da, da-da-da-da, I can't make things happen. And it's did-it-it, da-da-dit, da-da-da. It's still there, 53 years later. And you go through your life with the subconscious programming with an awareness that you are not in charge. You're not able to extend or transcend this way of thinking. This subconscious mind of yours is most impacted by your feelings. A change of feeling is a change of destiny. A change of feeling is a change of destiny. Write it down. Stick it on the wall next to your bed. If you came into where I sleep, you would see that. I look at that all the time. I want to practice putting into my subconscious mind the assumption of the feeling of what it is that I would like to attract into my life as if it already existed, and to feel it, not just to think it, but to feel it. Neville's Law of Assumption says this: if this assumption about what you would like to become is persisted in until it becomes your dominant feeling, the attainment of your ideal is absolutely inevitable. You must first assume the feeling of a wish fulfilled in all aspects of your life. So you have to say to yourself, what does it feel like to be prosperous? What does it feel like to be content? What does it feel like to be well?
Support for KFAI comes from Crooner's Supper Club, presenting a tribute to Antonio Carlos Jobim with Natanya and Ticket to Brazil, Saturday, January 31st. In the 1960s, Antonio Carlos Jobim combined cool jazz with samba. The result was the music known as Bossa Nova. Natanya Kamin and jazz combo Ticket to Brazil team up to pay tribute to Jobim and other Bossa Nova and Brazilian jazz composers. More information about a tribute to Antonio Carlos Jobim with Natanya and Ticket to Brazil is available at croonersmn.com.
We're going to end our Health Notes program with a 10-minute guided meditation. And then after the meditation, some healing sounds that will heal your body. Enjoy.
Find a comfortable and quiet space where you can relax without distractions. Take a moment to sit or lie down in a relaxed position. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath in through your nose and exhale through your mouth. Repeat this a few times until you feel yourself becoming more centered and at ease. Take another deep breath in and hold for 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and breathe out. Now, let's set our intention for this manifestation visualization. Take a moment to think about what you want to manifest in your life. It could be a dream, a goal, or a positive change you wish to experience. Visualize it as if it had already happened and feel the joy, excitement, and gratitude associated with its fulfillment. Focus on your breathing. Inhale. Exhale. Imagine yourself in a beautiful, serene place, a sanctuary that is all yours. This could be a beach, a forest, a mountaintop, or any place that brings you peace. Take a moment to observe your surroundings, the colors, the sounds, and the scents in the air. Allow yourself to feel completely at peace and safe in this place. Take another deep breath in and hold for 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and breathe out. Now, bring your desired manifestation into this sanctuary. See it vividly and clearly. clearly, just as you imagined it during our intention setting. Visualize yourself experiencing the success, happiness, and fulfillment that come with this manifestation. Allow yourself to bask in these positive emotions. Focus on your breathing. Breathe in and hold for 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And release. Engage all your senses to make the visualization more real. Feel the sensations associated with your manifestation. Touch, taste, smell, and sound. Embrace every detail as if you are living in this moment right now. Allow the positive energy of this manifestation to surround and fill you entirely. Visualize your goal, your dream, in all its detail. Express gratitude for the universe for bringing this manifestation into your life. Repeat affirmations related to your goal, using phrases like, I am worthy of this. I attract abundance. And I am capable of achieving my dreams. Believe in yourself and your ability to manifest your desires. Experience everything. How your body feels. What you can see. What you can hear, what you can touch, and what you can sense. As we come to the end of this visualization, take a moment to affirm your commitment to your manifestation. Know that the universe is always supporting you in your journey. You have the power to turn your dreams into reality, and the first step is believing in yourself. Take another deep breath in and hold for 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. and breathe out. When you are ready, slowly open your eyes. Take a few deep breaths and carry the positive energy of this manifestation visualization with you throughout your day. Remember, you have the power to manifest your dreams, and the universe is conspiring in your favor.